spookiest time of the year, there are a few guidelines all ghosts and goblins should follow. Always stay on sidewalks. Never go to a stranger's house. And never go out alone.
You're looking for vengeance. Say it. There's no graveyard way back deep in them woods. The thing you're looking for is in there.
It was an accident.
It's gotta run its course. Now it begins.
Welcome back, listeners, to 31 for 31. We are in episode 5, day 5, October 5th of our little mixtape. And we've got the delightful 1988 B-movie, Pumpkinhead, directed by Stan Winston. This is Janie Lansdowne, and I am joined by my co-hosts.
Chris Boniello.
I'm Pumpkinhead. I am Cody Mason.
Damn, Jamie, going with the limited release date.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting discussion.
I think it's 1989, but I guess Jamie's a bigger fan than we thought.
Jamie, pre-utero, definitely saw this movie at its limited festival release.
Yes, Pumpkinhead, which I had seen last Halloween or something, and you guys had not seen it for a long, long time.
No.
So it was more of a true revisit for you guys, correct?
This was the first time this was an age-appropriate film for me, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was the first time it wasn't either on TV, on a VHS, and my dad wasn't sleeping in the room.
I probably saw this movie and it was like 55 minutes on TBS because they got out a half hour of violence. I was very surprised by several elements of this film being included.
Yeah. And the lack of depth.
Yeah, it's a fairly straightforward film, which is why I think it deserves a spot on the list, because it wouldn't be Halloween or, you know, like it wouldn't be a proper mixtape if we weren't including a movie like this, which is just like a very straightforward creature feature movie. Although
you got to have a movie to finish your drink during and sit there and just, you know, chug a beer.
This movie has a vibe to it that I just love. And I think part of that is just, I feel like this was just on syndicated or was in syndication on like AMC every Halloween when I was growing up. It was like sort of,
it runs
like,
cheap. Yeah. You know?
It was probably dubbed pretty unceremoniously onto these channels. So I would see it, like pieces of it, so many times during the month when like AMC did like Fear Fest or Monster Fest or whatever they called
it. To attribute this to like what Chris compares to drinks, like in terms of meals, this is like when you go to Hardee's, not Carl's Jr., but like Hardee's in like Indiana on a drive, and it's like, that was good. And it's not really good, but contextually it's pretty good. So, you know, who knows where this movie takes place.
But I would argue, in terms of creature features, which, let's be honest, are probably some of the lowest quality of horror movies that are out there, like I think this one still is pretty good.
Oh, and it's got an excellent creature, if you're just going to judge it on that.
Yeah, and in terms of like creature features that now you look back on are like, you know, so painfully dated. At least like this is a lot of practical effects. Some people are giving it too much in their performances. Some people are barely there in the acting. But it just like, you kind of just smile the entire time, and throughout it, I was never like, oh, that's shitty CGI or this didn't work or that didn't work. I'm just like, you know, when the strobes are coming on, that Pumpkinhead's coming. But just the general lighting effects and production design are hold up so well that it's just fun to look at. I just had a smile on my face laughing and being like, I was a 12-year-old kid and I thought this was the most terrifying thing ever. And now I'm like, oh, we're not even like making this suspenseful. Like, he's just already in the room. He's like out there. He's out the window. Like, that's him. There's no...
He's Pumpkinhead. Yeah. He's going to get you.
Yeah. Like,
but I feel like you hit on a good note that it's like, this is the perfect mix, especially for performers, for me, where you've got one person who's outclassing this movie and Lance Henriksen, you know, just like actually milking this role.
It's not Haggis.
And then the rest of the performers are either like really overdoing it or really underbaking it. You know, it's just there's no one in the middle. There's no one who's doing an adequate job. There's only, which is perfect for this.
This feels like what would happen if you made a stage production of Jaws.
Yeah.
I feel like you would get this. You would get one person.
A nice little chamber drama.
You had like an old washed up Rorschacher.
Yeah, the one guy in town who can act. Who's just like fucking chewing up Chief Brody. Yeah. That's how this
Everybody
felt.
Else in this playing the shark, basically.
Well, Lance, first of all, Lance Henriksen is just awesome in everything. And I will say that I constantly confuse him with Scott Glenn. And they kind of combine like the coolness of both
Same
those
hairline,
actors.
Basically. Yeah.
Same like look. But he kind of went apparently like Daniel Day on this. I read that he made a set of dentures to give him a more rural look.
Oof.
Which was interesting.
Which is somewhere in this movie between a swamp and the desert of California.
Yeah, yeah, we don't know.
Wherever the biosphere of this film does not exist.
One part Louisiana, one part West Virginia, one part the, you know, Dust Bowl.
The back lot of California.
Yeah, it's like the drive between LA and Vegas where you're like, I'm not sure if this is desert or what.
Yeah, so it's never really said where they are, but it's supposed to, I guess, be like down the street from where Deliverance was set. Lance Henriksen plays, you know, a kindly shopkeeper with his son.
Ed Harley.
Yeah, named Ed Harley, which is a great name.
I have to just shortly interrupt because I wanted to make sure that Lance Henriksen was from a city because I could tell that he was performing this and he's from Manhattan. But right underneath, speaking of committing to a role in Daniel Day-Lewising something, it says on another occasion, because a lot of other nefarious things happen above, two of his uncles tried to persuade him to take methadrine and take part in a staged car accident for the insurance money. He left home permanently when he was 12. So
that's like the top of his Wikipedia page.
That's right up there. So I'm, you know, respect to the game. He knows how to sell a role.
That's incredible. Incredible.
He was also supposed to be like the original cyborg in Terminator.
That is true.
You know, you can't tell me that he's not secretly a robot in all of his roles. After Bishop and Alien, I'm like, you know, yeah. I want a little, show me the Carfax on your birth certificate. Anyway, back to him.
Back to him. So yes, Lance plays Ed Harley, who is a shopkeeper, and he's got his little boy who basically looks like the kid from Jerry Maguire.
100%. I'm so glad you
like,
said that.
I thought it was him at first. I was like, no, it doesn't work out, but it looks like him. I wonder if Cameron Crowe is like, he's got to look like the kid from Pumpkinhead because that's exactly who he looks like. You know, they live in this sort of like rural area and these shithead kids come through town, do a little gas stop, decide this is a good place to bring out our motorbikes and do a little laps. And these kids, these city folk, as they are termed, decide to take out their dirt bikes, do a few laps, and tragically hit Ed Harley's son, knocking him unconscious and, you know, fatally wounding him, which, of course, causes Ed Harley to go to the witch Haggis, who tells him that he can have his revenge, but it will cost him dearly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These kids, they scrammed, you know? They...
So a few things in this early scene that I picked up on. One, do you just dirt bike wherever you stop when you're a dirt biker? Is that just what happens? You just get off?
You got to get the edge out. It's like restless leg syndrome.
Like right in the backyard of the store. And then also, if you suspect someone of having a spinal cord injury, do not pick them up and carry them around. And also, if someone is gravely injured, don't just bring them home.
No, he had a case of movie death. You could see it all over his face. Fatal case of movie death. He just was down. You know, don't worry about it.
I like to think they were kind of like the dirt bike version of the guys from Point Break. Like they're just following the endless dirt road. They're waiting for those hills and they're like, they see them, those moguls, and they just gotta rip
endless past. Dirt summer, baby. I did want to interject that Ed Harley at this point does have some knowledge of the mystical nature of this town.
Yep.
We start with a flashback that could have been in Salem witch trials era, but apparently it's 1957.
Yeah, as I was watching with my fiance, and the title pops up that says 1957, and then it starts playing, and she was like, did they mean 1857?
Yeah, no, it's very recent. And, you know, there's somebody begging for their life and is saying he's innocent. His neighbors ignore him because they know that this is the custom, and little baby Ed Harley sees a creature take this guy out. So he kind of knows that there's a little pumpkin head going on around here.
Yeah. He's a bigger pumpkin head than the one in Trick or Treat.
Yeah. He's like Sam's older brother.
His cool dad.
which I was surprised rewatching this. I didn't realize that, like, in that first shot, you just get a full body of Pumpkinhead. Full on display with
full frontal,
the velociraptor legs and pointy shoulders. I was like, oh, I forgot that we go straight into it. I always remembered in my head that there was the transformation scene, and that was when you finally see him. But now we get a
shot.
They're
setting the tone early.
It's like a quick glimpse.
Doesn't hide in the shadows that much. He just kind of walks up to you.
Yeah.
I do like that opening scene I like the intro that it does kind of set the stage, and it brings in that weird, like, I don't know if it's supposed to be diegetic or not, but like the pumpkin head rattlesnake almost.
Yeah.
Sound
and the strobe
that
lights
accompanies him.
Somehow there's strobe lights, wind, and like a sound.
I mean, it's a class. It's like such like over the top, like monster. Yeah. It's like, oh, it just brings all this like creepy
He's
stuff.
Got a whole posse yeah. with him, just like yeah. hyping him up behind
it.
Like,
and it also,
like, X going to give it to you is playing.
And it also sets up the very confusing geography, because early in that scene, the guy is on like the porch of the house screaming to get let in, and then seemingly gets kind of like tossed over by Pumpkinhead, and it's all of a sudden falling down like a cliff into a little creek where I'm just like, where are we now?
Pumpkinhead fucking yeeted him across the fucking
I mean
lanes.
You do see that later. I was surprised at how less lumbering Pumpkinhead is than I remembered.
Yeah, he's sprightly.
He is spry, and he's also fond of picking people up.
Yeah, a lot of hand goes down, grab you. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
it. Kind of a predator move.
But anyway, before we even, I mean, we're kind of jumping around, but yes, Ed Harley's son is dead. He goes to the local witch, yeah. Haggis.
All right, Charles Dickens.
Which is a great name for a witch. And the witch is so delightfully over the top.
Whatever high school production of Macbeth.
What are you buying, Ed Harley?
Yeah, Ed Harley.
What are you selling, Ed Harley?
My favorite line is later when she's like, He's like, God damn you. And she's like, he already has Ed Harley.
Yeah. Ed Harley is the last two words of every line in this movie.
Yeah.
There's Pumpkinhead. Rolls off the tongue.
Did he introduce himself to her, or did she know his name?
Everybody
I was going
to
go back and rewatch it, and then I didn't.
If you're going to rewatch it for that, no, don't worry about it.
I mean,
he doesn't even really know. It's sort of like, it's implied that it's setting up this rural community that is aware of this sort of like demon pumpkin yep. head, and that there is a witch. And then I like that there is this sort of like brief mythology built in, enough that like kids speak of Pumpkinhead. It's sort of like a folklorish type thing that is in the community. And it's like, if you wrong someone, you better be careful, because they might just pay Haggis a visit and you might
sell their soul for vengeance.
I mean, it's very similar to Sam. You know, you got to follow the rules.
Yeah,
you got to follow the rules. And I guess rule number one of this town is don't kill other people's
yeah.
kids.
Yeah. Big no-no.
Big no-no.
Especially.
But apparently it happens frequently.
Oh, yeah. At least every 30 years. But
yeah,
I would say the point about the rest of the town that, you know, that's really framed around Ed Harley being like almost somewhat uppity compared to the rest of this, you know, West Virginia town
yeah.
or West Louisiana, California town, of just having the most obnoxiously and almost upsettingly portrayed poor people of just this one very backwards presented family of people basically wearing sacks
yep.
and just wanting corn feed and living outside.
And the guy who's like the grandfather is like 40.
Yeah, could have had a little more nuance there, but no, you got your Ed Harleys, who's just a single man working on a farm, and you've got Potato Sack Family, and those are the two castes of this society.
Yeah.
But, you know, those people come in handy.
And later. Off to the side is a witch.
Yeah, she's at the periphery, yeah.
It feels almost like a Stephen King short story. He's very fond of the group of kind of shithead teenagers that roll into town, mess something up. At least there's a slight twist to a narrative like that, is that the kids like did knock over a pumpkin and that's the reason that there's coming to kill them, like something silly like that. It's more like we actually have this sort of like other narrative of Ed Harley kind of unleashing this monster against these kids out of just like, I'm so angry, I'm so upset, I want my vengeance. And then almost immediately regretting it and like having visions of his son saying, what'd you do, daddy? Yeah. And like all this like horrible stuff. And then he's like, oh God, what have I done?
And then
done?
He has to feel the
pain. And then ultimately, yeah, and then he has to feel the pain and actually see what's happening, which I thought was like kind of an interesting little, you know, wrinkle in the story. Like, as we said, fairly straightforward kind of creature feature, but I like that it has like this little bit of a twist to it that makes it, you know, gives us a little more narrative purchase to cling on to and keep us interested. Yeah. That being said, like the actors that play the kids are, you know, I don't know how old they're supposed to be. They're,
we'll call them
particularly the one kid, the like the real asshole that is like, I'm on parole for another accident that I hit someone.
Yeah, yeah. I was also drinking.
And I was also drinking and they're going to get me. It's like that guy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like gets all of his friends killed they seem kind of okay. And like, especially the one kid who actually tried to do something.
Yeah, he gets
nice.
Fucked up.
He's
first.
The first one killed. He gets killed.
Yeah. The guy who's literally stayed with the body and was like, I'm doing everything I can under these circumstances. And he's just like, mark my words, you're dead first.
Yeah. He walks out the house telling the other guy, like, you need to do the right thing. And then just gets railed into a tree.
Yeah. I also, you know, and that's where this kind of goes is after we get our transformation. Pumpkinhead is just running rampant on these guys. And I did love the latent kind of like, all right, we better catch up with some characterization in terms of like literally being able to tell apart some of these other people. So the first person that happens to is the token Christian girl, I guess. Like they just basically are like, you always found your strength in prayer, so why don't you just deal with that? And she immediately is killed with, like, you know,
she gets a cross dragged into her forehead.
Yeah, her necklace with a cross, not helping anything there. But the pickoff nature of this really starts to be, you know, not too selective, and it doesn't really pick its final girls or anything like that in any way that really matters. They're just kind of scenery. And then it's really just a matter of like, as Pumpkinhead gets to appear and look cool, and how Ed Harley gets to act around that and being tied to that and feeling the emotion of that and kind of turning into the Pumpkinhead himself at times. Like, how does that play out and look? Well, we're just throwing bodies at the wall, basically. Like, none of these kids end up mattering.
Vengeance is blind. There's a lot of collateral damage here.
Yeah. Yeah. There could have been 5 or 7 characters in this that get killed. You know, who cares?
I mean, it's know from the start, from him killing like the two nicest people, like, oh, okay, the rules are a little bit out the window. It's not just who killed the kid. It's anyone around there.
Yeah. And I think to its benefit, where it's just kind of like, oh, okay, blind vengeance very clearly being portrayed as just being foolhardy.
Yeah.
Ed Hardy. And, you know,
Ed
just
Harley.
Rolling with that and having Pumpkinhead be this like blind force is kind of fun. But it does take a lot of the stakes out of, like, if you had this second third of the movie, it's only 86 minutes long, but like if you had this second third where it really starts to ramp up and you had how good Pumpkinhead looks compared to his, you know, contemporaries in the creature features of its time, and you had Lance Hendrickson really like amping this up, and you gave probably just like a tiny bit more effort to developing out like some characters that had relationships that mattered towards each other and guilt was really felt in a really personalized way or something, and their deaths were much more calculated rather than just like who runs outside in what order, I think this really would have been an elevated movie that could have been like more of a classic than just kind of like a cult creature feature that people like the look of the thing. So that's the disappointment I felt, but still does more than enough in other areas, I would say, to be fun.
I wish I could say the sequels took those lessons to heart and tried to, you know, learn from the first one, but they did not.
No.
And they are very bad.
They end up getting wings, though, which I thought was kind of fun. So there's always that going on.
The sequel is Blood Wings. And that, I mean, it became a franchise. So it, despite the first one not being very successful at all, you know, Stan Winston, creature designer, is famous for all these other movie monsters. Like, I think he maybe directed one other actual feature film after this that was also like kind of like a weird cult classic. There might be a Pumpkinhead in the future. God willing, it's a practical effect. I mean, that's like the thing also is that I think this movie comes out at a certain, like right before like CGI kind of takes over.
Yeah. Because they use it in the second one.
Yeah.
Gotta get those blood wings flapping and
CGI. And like, you know, like when you think creature feature, a lot of the times I think of as like some of these really bad movies on like Sci-Fi Channel that were just like, had some of the worst, like lamest CGI monsters ever.
Spiders.
Yeah, like stuff like that, that is just like totally ridiculous and like not really redeeming in any way besides being like, oh, this is like bad and you can watch it with a, you know, sense of irony, I suppose. But yeah, Pumpkinhead, I mean, this is like an awesome looking monster. It's kind of like a xenomorph Demogorgon yeah. kind of thing.
I mean, he did the alien queen, at least, of the aliens.
Yeah. So he... And I, you know, it would be suck if they did a reboot and it was just like a CGI thing. So.
I mean, I just don't even know why you do a like, it's just nothing is like that compelling other than the production design, the lighting is great and the creature design. So if you're not going to just do that again.
Yeah. A movie made famous for practical effects brought back to betray its own reason for being famous.
Yeah. I mean, nobody watched that The Thing remake.
I did. And
one has seen it at all.
That's like one of the hardest things to consider like canon in my life, you know, where it's like, that's technically canon for The Thing because it's about the Norwegian outpost. And it's like, well, now I have to think about that at the beginning of The Thing in the back of my mind. And it hurts.
No.
Because I love The Thing.
Well, that was another thing is that apparently they did a lot of practical effects. And then they like, for whatever reason, like went back and like CGI'd a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cooler if we just put some pixels on this guy's face? Pretty cool.
I'm not sure why, but I mean, what is your guys like, what's your Mount Rushmore of like movie monsters?
Oh man. I mean, I would probably start with, you know, like I want to go outside of the Universals and everything like that. I would probably go with like Werner Herzog's version of Nosferatu. Definitely is super creepy. That's the first one that came to my mind. I'm going to go to Chris while I brainstorm a little.
I mean, I don't, for me, I don't think anything could ever top Godzilla. I'm just such a big Godzilla fan. I watched so much Godzilla movies growing up. Like, I have specific Godzillas I like more than others. So even within that, there's like a genre of monster.
But I only like Son of Godzilla. He's my boy.
There's Godzilla Jr. also.
Gazuki. Isn't it like Gazuki?
That's from the animated one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Only 1998. That's it.
That's Zilla.
Z-Dog. I would probably say Tremors as well. Big for me. So, you know, or
Graboids.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm probably going to kick myself later. But I think like in terms of bipedal, creepy, walking up to you, I mean, like there's nothing better than a xenomorph for me. Probably I would go for that.
I have a huge soft spot for Space Godzilla, but I don't really like that movie as much. But Space Godzilla is one of my favorites. Just, I mean, now we're just stuck in Toho, but
I mean, hey, this movie is basically a Godzilla movie if you don't think about anything.
I mean, it is hard to top like the xenomorph too, and you get reminded of the xenomorph a lot through this, and it's just like it feels interesting to see this thing move and wonder like what they did to make some of these practical effects of the movement look better than how some of the scenes of the xenomorph does, or they had to make some of the scenes darker. I mean, the movie just takes place in a darker area anyways, but there's some really great walking shots in this of the creature that I think still hold up very well and reminded me of what they had to do for the fawn in Pan's Labyrinth, but they had to make those leg shapes and CGI stuff out. And this one, I was watching it wondering like how they pulled off some of this movement that worked really well. And it just, I don't know. I keep going back. Like, the lighting, the production design is so great.
Tiny budget, like $3 million. Yeah. Like, they got a lot out of their.
They have so many like huge lights outside these windows with fog. Like, such a shot when the kid is dying of like framed within the window and the sunlight coming in, and it's just like, I don't know. I want this team somehow to now get a real budget and make another movie 30 years later.
The fact that Pumpkinhead, like, just on a narrative standpoint, like, doesn't really show up till fairly late in the movie. Like, there's a lot of buildup before you even get to the monster, which I think also makes it effective. And not even just, like, a hiding the monster. It's like, we have the scene at the beginning, but then it's like, we really get to know Ed Hardy pretty well.
Yeah.
Ed Harley, before he goes on, like, this rampage. And, you know, like, we, you know... When that kid dies and those kids kind of run away, you're kind of like, you know, maybe I would dig up a creepy old pumpkin head monster that a witch told me to.
Yeah, and I like how there's kind of this like pretty realistic characterization of like, it doesn't even really need to follow the beats of the movie when he has realizations. It's just kind of like immediately he regrets it in a very human way and then like kind of acts accordingly and doesn't do a lot of like, his character is very consistent. He does a lot of things to try to defend the kids that make sense. And once he realizes that his fate is tied to the Pumpkinhead and he could feel, you know, the pain and is kind of transforming, like all of those beats hit well. It's just how often we get those beats as compared to just kids running in anticipation of being killed by the Pumpkinhead. And I think the parts where the Pumpkinhead's on screen, we're all here for it. When Ed Harley's hamming up, we're all here for it. But it really just taking away this very personal story that's set up to be about this one person who's doing a very good job and ends by doing a very good job in relation to this one beast. But then there's just clutter because otherwise it's going to be a 20-minute movie if you don't add 60 minutes of co-eds being killed who are completely outclassed by the rest of the movie.
It would be a bit more of just a technical showpiece.
Yeah.
Another thing that made me think of this that fit in more with Halloween than I even remembered is just how mischievous Pumpkinhead was. I did not expect him to play with the prey as much as he did. As a kid, I remember this being like horrifying, and Pumpkinhead like barely shows up and totally mutilates people. This one, he's like pulling people around, lifting them up in the trees, and then out of nowhere, he knows how a dirt bike works and can pull off the chain. The dirt bike is set up like they can get on it to get away, and then he's holding the chain, and I was just like, damn, Pumpkinhead is way smarter and way funnier than I thought.
Yeah, he has an interesting, without being like a speaking monster, he has an interesting level of like, all right, what level of cognition are we operating at?
Because
he's not a killing machine, he's just like a fuck with you before I kill you type. So
does not know how to use a gun though, because he just stabs a dude with a gun.
Very great moment. Just, you're waiting for that Pumpkinhead's going to blow you away moment, and then it's just, I'll just put this through. I'm strong enough.
Yeah. I mean, that might be a more effective way, because as we see later, you can shoot yourself in the head with a gun and then still somehow walk away and be okay.
I was waiting for it. I was waiting to criticize Ed Harley's.
I feel like there was a whole like string of movies in the late 80s, early 90s where there were headshots that either had very protracted deaths that lasted like 2 minutes of them like bleeding out of their brain, I guess, or just like missing. Not in a Fight Club way, but just like somehow, you know, like just very clearly in your front of your head, just getting shot and being like, oh, whoops.
Ricocheted off my skull.
I'll be fine for a half hour and then die a movie death like my son. That's all I got.
I did really enjoy the, I would like to see if this was written into the script where the tube for the flamethrower gets caught on the like rake and then stabs himself, and like just such a like inconvenient thing that somehow impacts the plot so heavily.
I think it was originally a rake that he stepped on and it slammed into his face. Like,
they're like, all right,
Sideshow Bob.
Same thing, but with a flamethrower, please.
I will say the stepping on the rake thing, to me growing up, it was like the Bermuda Triangle or quicksand. Like, it happens all the time. But I did do it fairly recently, and it hurts so much, and it surprises you out of nowhere. And I was like, oh, okay, that was the one where I thought, oh, as a kid, like, this is never happens. And then I did it to myself, and it is awful.
Continue to run that PSA.
Yeah,
it sounds awful.
I'm putting that out there.
Put rakes brush side down, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, it was just fun. It's a fun one. Like, watching it together with someone was fun, and like just drinking and laughing at it. And then I think it goes to show in these types of films, in Halloween movies, in genre movies, where people really care about what they're making, and it's not always the best story or the best creature effects, but you could tell they put their heart into this production design and this creature design, and it just shows. It's fun. Like, I'm not, you're not criticizing it or laughing at
Chris
that.
Chris isn't mad.
No.
Chris is happy.
I was happy the whole time. Like, all the crazy moonlighting, like the totally impossible strobe effects, and then like wind and rainstorms that are for some reason happening outside now. Like, whatever. It looks awesome.
They're isolated. Yeah, I feel like that's my biggest point is, you know, just if this were a 25-page Stephen King short story, they would cut out the fat of the kills and make it kind of more of a straightforward, like, movie of 30 minutes in terms of content. And if it ended the way that this ended with, you know, a really ugly ass necklace, but still a necklace made by his son being put on Ed Harley after the Pumpkinhead is burned and vanquished, suggesting that when Ed Harley's buried, he's going to be the next Pumpkinhead. Like, that's a good meat and potatoes, not shocking, but still like good turn ending. You would read that Stephen King story and turn to the next one being like, all right, that was nice,
yeah,
you know, and move on. And I think that just goes to show that, like, at least that character in relationship to the lore just works really well.
Yeah.
Good. Like, no complaints. And then, you know, you just have to trim the fat. But
yeah,
this movie's only 86 minutes, so the fat is basically the
main. And if they like happen to get better kids and just have like, they needed like one more scene or something. I mean, it's a typical 80s slasher, you know, kids set up and play through, although none of them have sex, which was surprising. It could have elevated a little bit more if they got a little more into it. It's just, it's so hard when you see such caricatures, even after you've gone through like a whole kid dying, and like, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm in on this. Like,
and the one guy that was doing well with the kids, the guy who was contrite, dies immediately.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, man, keep that guy around. He was doing okay. Like, he was actually a character. But yeah.
And tough also loss. Like that they pepper in some elements where they're like, yeah, maybe we'll have some lore in the kid from the swamp thing, or not the swamp, but the little smoky side village is like, hey, we can go through this old church. It might like slow him down. It was once a holy place. And he kind of like walks through and sees the cross and just like breaks it. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess I don't know the rules really, but
yeah, yeah. Like, we're learning as we go here. All right. He doesn't have blood wings yet.
And like, I mean, in that scene too, I'm like, I guess maybe the church slows him down, because in every other scene, he's just like flying up into trees with those legs that are kind of like cat meets velociraptor legs. So maybe the church keeps him grounded, but I'm not sure.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm not gonna. I think he's just toying with people and toying with God.
Yeah. And it also feels like a fun way, because in a lot of these movies from that era, if you had leg shots or walking shots, you had to do close-ups or inserts of feet and legs and different things. You couldn't show off the whole creature. I mean, that was the problem till the 90s when they started doing CGI stuff. You couldn't really show off a full creature like that unless you were doing miniatures. And so this one just comes off really, really well. It's fun. It's like, yeah,
when he walks into the room, both in the church, I thought it was a barn in my memory, but like the broken down church and then the cabin, like when he just fucking rolls up, you're like, oh man,
yeah, he just pops,
that's
in
the guy,
like,
right,
yeah,
there. Like, they're not hiding any blemishes.
Yeah,
like, he's just out here grinding, and that's pretty fucking great.
I feel, yeah, like there was a meeting and Stan Winston is like, I'm putting my fucking money on the screen here. Like, I've spent months designing this thing, it's all going on the screen. And the producers are like, yeah, but like, Jaws did really well, should we hide it? And he's like, no, like, first shot,
I'm gonna
full
duct
body
tape together the rest of this movie if I can just show this fucking thing.
Yeah, also, I don't know why there's a flamethrower, but we got one.
No, I mean,
he's like, we had it in Aliens, we have to have it in here. People love it, flamethrowers. But yeah, I guess, I mean, in conclusion, I think this is like a very effective, low budget creature feature. You mentioned Tremors, and I think this is kind of a similar ilk.
Yep.
Like, they're kind of like cut from the same cloth, as that they've become these sort of like cult classics, and they're, you know, like kind of goofy movies, but there is obviously a lot of, you know, like heart and like effort put on the screen, and it pays off. And I think particularly this one, with like sort of like all the texture and like, you know, Pumpkinhead and like the witch and everything, it feels very Halloween-y. And coming after Donnie Darko, we kind of wanted to like veer back into something a little more B movie-ish.
Take you out of your head a little bit.
Like Cody said.
Take you into the pumpkin
head. Like Cody said, this is a drive through meal. You're getting in, you're getting out, you're gonna say, yeah, that was good. I had fun. Like Coca-Cola tastes good. Let's go.
You know, after Donnie Darko, which is more of a, you know, several course meal to give you a quick fast food that you'll be hungry again and dive into something else next. So for part six, you know, here we took you to the West Virginia holler, so to speak. And next we're going to go back to the woods, a little bit creepier, a little bit more character driven and beautiful looking in a different way.
But speaking of beautiful looking, I will say the Pumpkinhead has some amazing posters. There's some really great art done for, like, there's just some love for this movie.
They look like Goosebumps covers.
They make a good t-shirt for sure.
Or tattoo.
Yeah. And I feel like it is one you bring up when people are just like, oh yeah, I remember watching that. And now you can be like, hey, let's go get a beer. Let's watch it. I have to listen to this podcast that these guys are doing.
I think all five episodes have ended with Chris Ann. All right, now let's go get a beer. Which is, you know,
I'm in quarantine and I have a problem.
You're going to have to start to talk about which beers go with each pumpkin ale.
I've actually just been drinking cocktails the whole time, too.
Yeah, the next movie is the 12 Steps.
It's true. It's true. Well, we'll see you back in the woods next time. Thanks for tuning in. And don't go killing any children now.
Don't lose your head.
Don't lose your head. Hey, we'll see you next time.